This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk, Part 4. And the concluding part of Joan Roloff's 2022 book published by Clarity Press. The trillion-dollar silencer, why there's so little anti-war protest in the United States. And that was, again, a silence for all those who have lost their lives due to the wars and insanity. I'll start off with a quote from the Tao Te Ching, or Tao Te Ching. Therefore, sages, in, quote, ruling, make themselves ordinary. They ensure that what is taught does not cause violence. Now, when I do classes in libraries on haiku poetry or brush calligraphy, a lot of times I ask if people have heard of the Tao. And I don't know what percentage. I would say like 80 to 90% have not heard of it. Understandable, because it's Chinese. It's a Chinese way of living and philosophy, so to speak. But the point here is that the U.S. is most un-Tao-like. And before getting into the chapter, I just want to point out that the can talk about this and analyze this and on, but like if you look at photos of Syria and now Palestine, and you see these just totally the buildings obliterated, bombed out, destruction, nothing, basically essentially rubble with nothing left. This, you know, now in Gaza, and as it was in Dresden, this is the way of the insanity and the warmongering that is what I would call the bottom line of the consciousness. There is nothing going on in their heads except destruction and then the dollars, because a lot of times they rebuild. They destroy to rebuild, but you cannot rebuild the lives that have been taken and the injuries and the diseases and the poisoning of the land and the water and the air where the wars have occurred or are occurring. So again, I want to emphasize this because it's good to read books and learn and do things, but sometimes it helps to remember that that's the result is just the insane obliteration that is perpetrated. That's my little editorial in the chapter 7, What Can Be Done. There are many people and organizations doing good work in an effort to diminish the power of the warfare state, reduce the risk of nuclear annihilation, and promote a world of peace and justice. These efforts make the extent and the implications of the military-industrial complex more visible, but many look away and the mountain is huge to move. What you can do to help break the silence. Breaking the silence is feasible. Learn about the military-industrial complex, the policies it supports, and the consequences of its preparations and operations. Talk about it both informally and in presentations to your community. Information is most willingly received by those with whom you have some connection. Remind anti-poverty, human rights, and environmental organizations about how militarization exacerbates their concerns. And then online, she lists National Priorities Project, Center for Defense Information, Center for International Policy, Federation of American Scientists, Watson Institute Costs of War Project, Antiwar.com, Tom Dispatch, Covert Action Quarterly, Black Agenda Report, Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Number 2 on our list, contact your congresspeople or president or sign petitions online. Well, I don't have much faith in that one because across the board, Democrats and Republicans, except for a scant few, have been voting in the war machine on and on. So maybe that does something. I personally wouldn't waste my time. Join and work with anti-war organizations, or if that's not practical, send a donation. Code Pink is one of the most well-known. Divest from the War Machine is another one. World Beyond War is another one. International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN. And the National Network Opposing the Militarization of Youth. See, that was noticeable in the previous episode, how much youth stuff. It reminded me of the when I would see World War II films, news films, newsreels of young kids, and it was the Hitler Youth Movement. Well, just recently, Jimmy Dore did a show with did a clip of Raytheon, one of the top weapons manufacturers, or as he aptly called, the death merchants, teaming up with the Girl Scouts, building brighter futures, except for the people who Raytheon drops bombs on. So it's not an extreme to compare that to Hitler Youth. That is not hyperbole. The National Network Opposing the Militarization of Youth, Veterans for Peace, War Industry Resistors Network, Military Families Speak Out, Veterans Against the War. Another one she mentions, which, again, I'm not too keen on. I did several bunch of shows on the Bright Green Lies book, The Green New Deal. I think the Roloff's is well-intentioned, in her care for the Earth and the environment, but and I would say, even though she does mention the native peoples many times in the book, she misses the boat, no pun intended, the key values of the original U.S. Green Movement of the 1980s. Well, yeah, the original Green Movement was, before 1492, but, it's a worthy point. The original U.S. Green Movement of the 1980s, still worth learning about, such as ecological wisdom, social justice, nonviolence, decentralization, and respect for diversity. The Green Movement was not able to propel the needed massive transition. One of several organizations now fathoming this is the Green Transition Initiative, but much more work on this matter is required. As an instance, well-funded think tanks engaging physical and social scientists, activists, representatives of diverse occupations, cultures, indigenous peoples, and foreign wisdom, and even some industrialists. She mentions the shift of priorities to promote a preferable alternative economy, politics, and culture. Well, that's one of the key things, is a different kind of economy, because as the title says, the $1 trillion, it's just the economy is rooted and based in the military-industrial complex. Creating a peace culture. She quotes a William James 1910 essay. War against war is going to be no holiday excursion or camping party. The military feelings are too deeply grounded to abdicate their place among our ideals until better substitutes are offered than the glory and shame that come to nations as well as to individuals from the ups and downs of politics and the vicissitudes of trade. Men now are proud of belonging to a conquering nation, and without a murmur they lay down their persons and wealth, if by so doing they may fend off subjection. But who can be sure that other aspects of one's country may not, with time and education and suggestion enough, come to be regarded with similarly effective feelings of pride and shame? If now, instead of military conscription, a conscription of the whole youthful population to form for a certain number of years a part of the army enlisted against nature, the injustice of inequality in toil would tend to be evened out, and numerous other goods to the commonwealth would follow. I think he means like peaceful, let there be peaceful warriors for nature. And that's one of the biggest suggestions I found in this last section. One of the biggest things I hadn't thought about much is what to do with that machismo energy. So you have this whole, these people that, the rah-rah and we're number one and celebrating army war victories, or if there are any, but you have a culture entrenched in that psychology. So how do you transform and transmute that machismo and that energy into constructive energy and non-destructive to nature energy? I think that's a key thing to look at, not just people are like, oh, when will we have peace and when can we stop the war? Well, yes, but also you have to look at all the people involved. The other thing is the grieving that the country, there's a great book by Martine Prechtel about grief and praise, The Smell of Rain on Dust, and he talks about that when a culture, a country does not grieve, and especially after a war or during a war, then it gets suppressed and it just, the pattern perpetuates. So that's what I see as a twofold, quote, solutions, is what to do with the machismo and grieving the way through it. Another suggestion has to do with the transforming the educational system from self-serving to the Mother Earth, the community, and the creative. A lot of the target, no pun intended, target audience is young students and learning technology and robotics and all these things that then get applied to the war machine. So if we can have a certain amount of technology, but not with that emphasis toward the military-industrial complex. And following up on that idea of what to do with the machismo, those with the need to perform heroic deeds would find appropriate challenges given the condition of the nation. So that's part of it. Those who have that gusto, those who have that character that they are gung-ho to go to war. In essence, she's saying that this is like, something built inside some people to perform heroic deeds. So again, how do we transmute that energy, that psychology, into a constructive activity? Also, she mentions young children, a culture of peace, justice, and equality. She mentions the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the conversion to a civilian economy. The agricultural department needs to oversee a total transformation of our food, fiber, and forestry systems. Enormous agribusiness land use, destroying people, communities, animal abuse, child labor, hunger, food wasted at all stages, and so on. So she gets into the, plant-based diets, farmers being able to earn their living, respecting and nourishing the earth. We could maintain an appropriately scaled military department and budget rather than one that is more than the next 9 countries combined, one addressing actual issues of national defense rather than bent on foreign expansion and aggression, and with a strong commitment to peaceful solutions of disputes. Well, that's a good suggestion. That's been bandied about for a while with all the problems in the country and infrastructure and poverty and this and that, all the billions, trillions being spent elsewhere, creating foreign expansion and aggression could instead, the quick fix, turn that internally, and I would say virtually all the problems would disappear. However, curtailing our military and corporate globalization will reduce the number who are forced to migrate from war-torn countries such as those of Central America. And that's another problem. She mentions that the ton of refugees of recent are due to the wars. So the whole war psychology compounds problem after problem after problem. Towards the end of the chapter, the very existence of NATO contradicted the UN Charter, which held out hope for countering aggressive nations by means of collective security and was based on the common belief that military alliances were a major cause of war. The people of the United States, indeed of the world, would be safer and their lands cleaner if the U.S. closed its overseas bases and most of the domestic ones, ended its regime change, war games, proxy wars, and bombings, and began to dissolve NATO and its partnerships. There again, it reminds that I read some statistic recently about it was like 3,500 complaints. I think it was Islamic or some minorities that exacerbated after Israel started its genocidal campaign against the Palestinians. Because the way the news gets played, the Hamas attack, supposedly Hamas attack on Israel, is framed as, those Islamic people or whatever religion they are. And then those people become the other enemy that internally then there becomes a backlash in the country of bias. This happened after the World Trade Center, when Muslims and even Sikhs, people that weren't even involved just because of the color of their skin or their turban, were being attacked. So it's the what Chalmers Johnson called about the blowback. What America does outside, or then it comes back. So it's just these problems get compounded and compounded. So that's why she makes a good point. And here's she ends with a quote from Prime Minister of Japan and his cabinet. This may go back to 1947. We might take a leaf from the constitutional provision we imposed on Japan after World War II, renunciation of war. Article 9, aspiring sincerely to an international peace based on justice and order, the Japanese people forever renounce war as a sovereign right of the nation and the threat or use of force as means of settling international disputes. So I did not know of that. That's a country, sometimes a country has just had it. They've been battered, but, the U.S. has been doing most of the battering, so it's hard. There is plenty of challenging work to do healing the planet. That is an understatement. And ends the book with the final word. Another thing she mentions is, vocational training, ways for education to work to help within the communities. Whether it's technologies, helping in the communities, vocational, things that are constructive. Obviously, that's the simple key, constructive rather than destructive. So the last section of the book is a page. I'll read that. The final word. The millions sheltered under our thick insecurity blanket, including the enlistees under the most prickly part of it, are not to blame. A very few people may be thrilled by the idea of wreaking death and destruction, but most are just trying to earn a living, raise their families, and keep their organization or rust belt afloat. Those engaged in weapons production may prefer constructive work or income from civilian sources. Still, many have been indoctrinated to believe that militarism is normal and necessary. Those who see the necessity of change for planetary survival, justice, and sanity need to become aware of all the ways that the military, industrial, congressional, almost everything complex is being sustained. This book has documented part of the picture. There is, unfortunately, much more. Once this understanding is achieved, there remains the difficult work of making such a transition happen, in view of militarization's political strength in the U.S. and much of the world. Our political system, despite its well-publicized and expensive elections, does not afford citizens much democratic control over policies, virtually nothing, and hardly any over foreign policy, again, virtually nothing. Those are my inserts. Military organization can get things done without waiting for someone to decide that a profit can be made or the need to balance costs and benefits, to put it mildly. That type of organization can also promote cooperation, respect for diversity, and camaraderie. The problem is with the things: superpower dominance, regime change, a multitude of military bases, bombing countries back to the Stone Age. If the Department of Defense were reduced to protecting against actual threats, what a concept! Actual threats, focusing on defense rather than aggression, there would be fewer threats and resources aplenty for necessary domestic reconstruction. A Green New Deal, including national service, could be the first step in civilianizing our nation. In addition to preventing it from looming disaster, it could enhance our own and the world's prospects for health, justice, and sustainability. If we could divert the same trillions the government is already injecting into the economy to civilian purpose, we could repair the environment, provide everyone a fine standard of living, and work for peace with Earth. She says peace on Earth, but peace with Earth. Essentially reversing the polarity, and essentially, as I've heard Native people say, aside from the country versus country, what's really underneath all that is the war on Earth. So that I think she's on the right track, Joan Roelofs, in pointing to the, transforming and turning around the trillions of dollars. And maybe, I don't know how much the Green New Deal, but if we can have that consciousness of caring for the earth, for the communities, because our communities have streams and rivers and land where we grow our food and on. So I think that's a key thing for the consciousness shift, aside from the how to get people to think and live peacefully. So thanks for hanging in there. If you listen to all four parts, I really wanted to highlight this because it's been on my agenda radar for many, many years, and I think it's one of the most crux issues for the United States and in the world. So I wanted to put a lot of attention to get people to think about it, be aware of it, in whatever organizations they participate in or where they send their money, to think twice or to look to do a little research to find out who's actually supporting what you're trying to support. And if there's things that you can do on your own, either with an organization or elsewhere, or just in your own peaceful way. The other thing is, people try to stop things politically, but it seems like trying to stop the weapons manufacturers would be the number one. But how that gets done, some people do protest outside of weapons manufacturers, but that's a whole nother topic. But whatever you can do personally to live in a peaceful way and to emanate peace. And it may sound cliche, but really every person's consciousness, every person making a vow to encourage peacefulness and to diminish conflict makes a difference. So thank you again for listening, and thanks to Joan Roloff for her very significant book. Chock full of information and some good messages and suggestions. The $1 trillion silencer, why there's so little anti-war protest in the United States, and what can be done to turn the tide. Thank you for listening, and be well.